Bill and Calamity Jane are here, and now so are you. From Deadwood, South Dakota, this is the Real Deadwood Podcast with Paul Dennis.
Hey everybody, this is Paul Dennis, and welcome to this episode of the Real Deadwood Podcast, episode number 5. And I'm speaking to you from the Real Deadwood in the Black Hills of South Dakota. And this is the Real Deadwood Podcast, a variety show for fans of the award-winning HBO Deadwood series all over the world, combining interviews, entertainment, and news from both Deadwoods. As usual, we've got a great show for you today, and we're going to start things out with the final installment, the grand finale, the last segment of the press conference by the 11 Deadwood actors who came here to visit in South Dakota over the summer. But there will be more content from the from various Deadwood actors after this, but this is the last bit of that press conference that they did that morning. After that, we're going to be talking to Mary Kopko, the head of the Adams Museum and House, about some more involvement with the Deadwood show and some things about some stories about old Deadwood. Then we're going to have the second part and conclusion of my interview with Big Head Todd Park Moore, who was here for the Deadwood Jam in August. And we're going to hear some music. I've got a double medley, so that means we're going to have four tunes from him today. Then we're going to have, as usual, our soundseeing tour of Mount Moriah Cemetery, current home of Wild Bill and Calamity Jane, featuring Alex, my son, who was the tour guide at Mount Moriah over the summer. After that, we've got a new song from Earl Brown's band, Sacred Cowboys. I emailed him and told him asked him if he had any more music for me to play, and he sent me a song that is going to be on their upcoming album, so this might be kind of a sneak preview for you. After that, we're going to have George Milos from the Deadwood Chamber, the director of the Deadwood Chamber of Commerce, talking a little bit more about some of the events here in Deadwood. But before we start all that, first of all, what I'm really going to do is thank you. All the fans worldwide who have tuned in to the Real Deadwood Podcast and who have checked out the realdeadwoodpodcast.com website, I just wanted to read a little list here of some of the countries that have been recorded as having visited the website. Of course, the United States, right? Then we've got Canada, United Kingdom, Australia, Germany, Netherlands, Sweden, Finland, France, Spain, Republic of Korea, Norway, Brazil, Switzerland, Ireland, Austria, Turkey, Romania, Japan, Singapore, Haiti, Hong Kong, Hungary, Italy, Denmark, and Qatar, or Qatar, I've heard it pronounced sometimes. So thank you so much to all you fans worldwide, fans of Deadwood, of both Deadwoods, I assume. I hope that you will get a chance to visit us here in the Real Deadwood at some point and to walk down Main Street and to take part in all the festivities and fun and concerts that we have here every year. Okay, let's go ahead and get started now with the conclusion of the press conference with the Deadwood actors. And as usual, I will have a transcript of that. I do have it, as a matter of fact, out on the Real Deadwood Podcast. I'm actually ahead of the game for a change. Usually it takes me a day or two to finally get that together, but I was a little bit conscientious this time, and so it is out there for you to follow along with, so you can hear who's saying what and kind of follow the voices and see who's talking. So here we go with the conclusion of the press conference with the HBO Deadwood actors.
It's a very physical show. Sean's dragging a dead body from that scene through the mud when it was really raining, and that thing just wouldn't move. Kind of dragging a dead body. Who was on that?
That was Ray McKinnon.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
The preacher.
Yeah, the preacher's taking him over to
swear. Which is fun, but you do it 15 times. Yeah. The first couple times, you're like, easy. What a great job.
On a wooden.
Yeah.
And then by a 2x4 slide.
You know? Like, you had that wrestling match. Ooh, the day you would carry that real pig around.
Oh, yeah, carrying the pig was fun. The pig was frozen when we started in the morning. By about 5 o'clock, it just started. The worst part of it was the way I had to set the pig was so that its legs were like this, the front, because I had to flip it around my shoulder right up. That was the middle distance. Like, okay, you got the pig. So I got. But the problem with that is after that pig had thawed for about 5 hours, every time you put the pig, I can't really explain it. I'll try. You put the pig on, and its cavities open. So it just made this. Had a microphone every time. It's right by your ear. And it goes, like a speed rolling on your.
In the meat house, in Woo's meat house, that's all real. Yeah. It's not fake. Yeah. They go and buy that stuff in the morning, and pigs are frozen. They're like, remember the baby pigs? In Chinaman's Alley, the scene?
Yeah, that was.
We started with like these aborted piglets, and there's like a dozen of them. And they were getting ripe when they were dead.
Oh man. There was a David that we shot that funeral scene with the kid, that the little girl was there, and she was, you know, we all have a little trouble staying with that long when it's a little kid like that, gets really tough. And she was, the first day we did it, she burst into tears at certain points. The second day, it was my mission to keep her entertained. And it was, I triple dare you to, was the game, and you had to do the thing, and she triple dare you to. And there was a cart. Yeah. Hanging from one of the, you know, the set pieces. And it had been hanging there, I think it was a car, but it had been hanging there pretty much all day, the day before, and it was hanging there. And she triple dared me to stick my finger in his mouth. So it was my mission to keep her happy, so I had to go and do it. And I made a big production out of it, and I did that. And the thing had teeth, and my finger came out bloody. And I was just so skeeved by it, and the medic came and applied things.
She had done it better.
I was like, anything for that child.
It's really hard to follow something like that up with another question, but I'm going to try. This is a question more for Pavel and Paula, because you two were not from the United States, right? Well,
what?
From Ireland, right? And Pavel, you're Russian, too. Mm-hmm.
It seems
like you have a pretty international cast. Ian is British.
Yeah.
What's it like being from another country working on a set like this for all these people?
Great.
Fantastic. It never was felt like too much of a stretch for me because a lot of the Ulster people settled in the south along the Appalachian Trail, and that's where a lot of the music, etc., comes from. So these things are seem very natural to me. I'm sure it's a bigger stretch for Pasha, who's from far away. Are you okay?
Fine.
Are you doing okay? But yeah, it's been incredibly fun. And when I take my mom, because I'm from Belfast, when I take my mom and dad to the set, they're like, Jesus fucking Christ, anything like it, you know?
See, there's not enough cursing in this show to really capture.
People have asked me, was it hard to, you know, embrace the language? And I said, it was hard to tone it down.
You gotta see her Joan of Arc.
Does anyone have a closing question? If not, what I'd like to do is I'd give you a little heads up on what's going to happen after this. We have an 11:30 in front of the Bullock where you have a photo op with all of the cast assembled in front of the Bullock, stagecoach, wagons, etc. And then this afternoon, 2 to 4, at the Tonka Gold Dust and Cadillac Jacks, there'll be autograph sessions. The cast is going to split up and do those. Tomorrow they'll be touring, some of them Rushmore, some Buffalo, birds at Custer State Park, others will be hanging around Deadwood. And I want to thank you for coming out here today. I also want to let you know that we'll have a few moments right now to do one-on-ones, if you care to, it'll be a little loud out on the street.
I'm not making out with anybody.
Okay, we have someone interested back there.
Did it have to be just one-on-one?
So join me again and thank the cast for being here. We really...
I just want to bring up the point about the poker game tomorrow.
It's over.
We're
Robin is a celebrity poker champion for anyone who doesn't already know that.
I'm signed up. I'm taking it wrong. Anyone else? You're in.
I don't know how to play, but I think maybe I have time to learn.
Yeah. I'll learn this morning.
Thank you again.
So that ends the press conference that the Deadwood actors gave when they were here. But there was another get-together. There is a question and answer session at the Bullock Hotel, which we will, which I have for you. And then Friday night, Earl Brown and one of the members of his band played a kind of an acoustic set, so I've got some sound from that. And then Saturday night was the it was a banquet that was given, and various members of the cast got up and did a lot of talked on stage, and some did comedy routines, and some just spoke about having been in Deadwood. So there's plenty more to come from the HBO Deadwood actors. So stick around, and you'll be hearing a lot more from them. Next, we have my wife Mary, who is the director of Deadwood's Adams Museum and House, and she's going to tell us some more about what happened in the real Deadwood.
Many that came here were immigrants who were trying to make good. They were seeking a fortune. And, you know, the federal government had this little habit of perking people's ears up. You know, they wanted people to go and discover the gold because the gold standard was tarnished, to say the least. And so you needed people, you needed prospectors coming here to try to turn...
They were encouraging people to illegally come on to the Indian land?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The whole Custer reconnaissance was, you know, whispering...
To provide an incentive for...
Oh, sure. Yeah. You know, we think that, you know, what's happening today with Karl Rove, you think what's happening today politically is new? Hell no.
Hell no.
No. I mean, the government needed word to get out. And that's why when Custer came here, he had a full band, he had prospectors, he had geologists, he had people, even though he was purportedly here to look for a way to connect the forts. That wasn't the real reason. The real reason is that we were in an economic panic in 1873, post-Civil War. We needed to have another gold rush. And gold was the standard that...
But they didn't just send him here in the dark and say, gosh, we hope there's gold there.
No, people...
How did the rumor start that there was gold here? Did the Indians have some sort of gold artifacts, or there was some sort of hint or rumor that there was gold here?
There were white people here all along.
The fur traders and the...
The fur traders, the French were here. Mm-hmm. There had always been rumors... And we even have diaries from people that were here prior to 1874 who were prospecting. You'll talk to Jerry Bryant, and he has done significant research on people that were here. People knew that the Black Hills had gold. Now, it wasn't as straightforward as the California gold rush, which happened in 1849.
Mm-hmm.
And...
Hence the San Francisco 49ers. Yeah.
But there hadn't been a significant gold rush since 49. You know, and then you have...
So nowadays we have wars to boost the economy, and back then they had gold rushes.
And wars.
Well, but the Civil War didn't do much because of you were fighting yourselves and kind of destroyed both economies. So that didn't work, so they said, let's go for a gold rush. Huh?
Well, and gold was the monetary standard, you know, and so if you don't have access to it and it's not circulating, what do?
Go find
some more. Well, you know, the federal government knew gold was here. They had all knowledge of that. And there's a lot of debate going on why then did they sign the Fort Laramie Treaty in 1868, giving the Lakota the Black Hills.
And they just send them to the worst land ever.
Well, they did. They actually
did. Ultimately they did, but...
Well, no, the Black Hills, in terms of what you could get off of the land if you're Native American, this was their sacred area. They went to Bear Butte. They went and worshipped here. But this was not the best hunting grounds. It certainly was not fertile enough to grow.
Well, the Lakota weren't farmers anyway. They were hunters.
No, they were hunters, And but still, the Great Plains offered them great opportunity to survive. And the Black Hills, however, was a place that they came to winter to also worship. And
so they basically gave them their church.
Basically, yeah. Yeah, that would be right. So
why were they so kind-hearted to do that?
Because
they thought that economically it would keep them in their place?
Yeah, pretty much. And the attention was on other stuff at that time. But then when you start having people pushing the point, you know, there's gold in them, there are hills. They needed Custer to come here. Mm-hmm. And Custer was...
the first scumbag to come to the Black Hills?
No, he wasn't the first, but he...
one of the major ones.
He was haughty. And he did things that were absolutely...
well, he had political aspirations, and he thought that this would lift...
yeah, he was going to run for president.
He thought this would enhance his credibility and his image.
But he did things like ride a horse up Bear Butte, the sacred place.
Right, like riding a horse into a cathedral or something.
Yeah, well, it'd be like drinking holy water or... peeing in holy water. I mean,
well,
that would
doing
be the,
something in Jerusalem or to the Wailing Wall or anything that was a highly religious place.
It was
Mecca.
It was totally inappropriate, totally offensive.
Right, he was thumbing his nose at the spirituality of the Indians.
And so then you had, and of course they had prospectors, and they discovered. Quote,
by the way, anybody in the podcast who thinks we're being politically incorrect by saying Indians instead of Native Americans, that's what they call themselves. And here in South Dakota, which is Indian country, you have a newspaper called Indian Country Today. Mm-hmm. You have, it's just, you know, we just kind of, after being here for so long, we refer to the Indians the same way they refer to themselves. But if you want to, you know, substitute Native Americans every time we say Indians, please feel free to do so. But so anyway, we digress.
Well, and I guess my point was going to be that following, quote, the discovery of gold, you had the Newton-Jenney expedition. They were geologists, and they came here, and they kind of poo-pooed what was here. They didn't think that it was anything of great significance. But word got out, and, of course, the newspapers spread, you know, gold in the hills. And so people were coming here, and to begin with, the government made a half-hearted attempt to throw people out. And then by the end of 1875, when they were discovering major gold in Deadwood Gulch, the government just turned a blind eye and looked the other way. People came.
And that part is portrayed accurately in the TV
show. Oh, absolutely. Yep. And the show, the thing that I try to stress to people is that the series is historical fiction, but is deeply grounded in reality. And it's interesting. Interesting.
Interesting and awesome. The Deadwood series is, of course, our favorite, and we're sure it's your favorite, too. Here's another favorite of mine, though, coming up now, and this is our musical guest for the day. I interviewed him at the Deadwood Jam, which is our music festival that we have here every August. And, as usual, I've got a little medley of a couple of tunes here. In fact, he will soon tell us that these tunes are from his biggest album and also his biggest single. So give a listen.
Than bitter, bitter than sweet. It's a bittersweet surrender. sweet, more sweet than bitter, bitter than sweet. It's a bittersweet surrender.
And that is Todd Parkmore, better known as Big Head Todd. And so upcoming now is the conclusion of the interview I did with him. Now, at the end of this, I had two microphones. I had one for me and I had one for him. And as he got up to leave, I had turned off one of the microphones, and I guess it was my microphone because you'll hear my voice get very faint, and his is still picking up okay. But I went in and edited and boosted the sound so that you could hear this ending part, because this is where he talks about his own podcast, which I kind of alluded to in episode number 4, the last Real Deadwood podcast. So listen closely, and here we go with Todd Parkmore.
What's your biggest hit, would you say?
Sister Sweetly's our biggest album.
Right.
And Bittersweet's our biggest hit song.
I'm trying to think, when you guys were here last, was the year that we asked each of the bands to donate a song for that compilation CD? And what was it that you guys, I can't remember what
I'm
it was.
I'm afraid I can't either.
Yeah. It wasn't Bittersweet. But anyway, I mean, that I think that was probably one of the better. You guys were here when Big and Little Feet were here that year.
Cool.
Did you get to see them?
Oh, yeah. I get to see them a lot, actually.
Really? Are they from your neck of the woods? Or
no, for some reason we end up playing together. Like this summer we played together about 3 times.
Wow. Yeah, they're talk about legendary. Well, it's too bad you're not going to be around tomorrow, because have you ever played with Leon Russell before?
Yes, I have.
Really?
That's a special thing.
Yeah. Well, how long ago was that?
I think it was about 3 years ago.
How many dates do you guys do a year?
About 70, 80. Not a lot. I mean, we're old, so.
I was going to say, is everybody in the band married now and kind of want to stick around a little bit?
All of us are married except Brian is getting married in May, so.
Well, it says here that you incorporate, quote, anti-pop, old-school, psychedelic elements. Is that something that you said, or sometimes these writers...
Somebody else made that
up.
Yeah,
sometimes these writers get a little carried away, huh? That's off your website, too. It says, singer, songwriter, and guitar player Moore says he's incorporated anti-pop, old-school, psychedelic elements, in quotes, to keep the album sound contemporary and the band on an ever-evolving course. Now, you said this.
Okay.
I like to call it Techno Delta,
yeah.
He says. Delta blues with synthesizers. Now...
I was talking about a lot of the songs on our Crimes of Passion was the name of that record.
Uh-huh.
It was our most recent studio record, and that's kind of part of the concept for it.
Uh-huh.
Just kind of the old school Delta, but a representation of it, I guess.
And it says that you played the sax on that too, huh?
Yeah,
Do you keep your chops up at all? Do you still play a little bit?
Not as much as I ought.
Yeah. That'd be pretty awesome to whip around and
I know.
Pick up a sax.
I got a lot to do already.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, I know that, you know, this being the 15th anniversary of the Jam, Young Dublin, as a matter of fact, the Young Dubliners were in here talking to me a little while ago, and they said that they've done some shows with you guys.
Yeah, we played a whole tour with them, and we've seen them a couple times this summer.
Yeah.
So we really enjoy them a lot.
That Kevin is, Kevin. Keith's a real partier there.
Yeah.
No question about that.
Well, these Irish, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, I don't want to take too much more of your time, but I really do appreciate
cool.
you coming by.
Thanks a lot
As
for having
fact,
me.
In fact, I'm going to shake left
hand. Thanks a lot for having me.
You bet. Take care.
Okay, you too.
All right. Thank you very much.
No worries.
Thank you very much.
What's the name of your podcast?
It's going to be called The Real Deadwood Podcast. You guys have a website, right?
Yeah. I actually have my own podcast.
Do you? Are you on iTunes?
Yeah.
Well, my thing's going to be The Real Deadwood Podcast.
Cool.
It's not out there yet because it's still in the works. I don't want to just... What's yours called?
Todd Parkmore Philosophy.
.com?
No, just look under Search Philosophy, Buddhism,
okay.
Or something like that. Politics.
And is that what you talk about on your...
Yeah.
Podcast? You want to talk about music?
No, I just philosophy, Socrates, that kind of thing.
Really? Do you have a degree in that or anything?
No, just a lot of spare time.
Too much spare time.
Okay, Paul.
Okay, man, I appreciate it.
Be well.
Yeah, Todd Parkmore, what a nice guy. Now, the song that he and I could not think of that they had donated to a CD that we put out once from the Deadwood Jam, a compilation of all the bands that played that year, Little Feat and Big Head Todd and the Monsters. The name of that song was Beautiful World. And so I've put together a little bonus medley today. By the way, these medleys that I put together, no individual tune is any more than about 30 seconds. And they say that that's legally all you can play of copyrighted material, so I try to stick to that. So here are two 30-second snips. One, as I said, is Beautiful World. Now, the other one is a song that is not on any of their recordings but is available at bigheadtodd.com for a free download. And it's called Juliana, and it's Todd with an acoustic guitar, and his singing is great on this. And every time I hear this song, it sticks in my head for two or three days. So here we go again with Beautiful World and Juliana featuring Todd Parkmore.
To give at the end, wasting all the time we can spend. We made a chance, it's a beautiful world. Let love surround it, give it a word. Can't understand why it's so hard to keep this beautiful world living in peace. You believe I be the lover you want me to be. You are the moon and the sun and the sea. Juliana, don't set me free. Juliana, I want you now. You're the woman who showed me how to be a man and make up my mind. Juliana, wasting time, don't set me free.
This is the Real Deadwood Podcast with Paul Dennis.
Yes, it is. And again, that's Jeff Straub from jeffradio.com, who was nice enough to do all these voiceovers for me through radiodaddy.com. Next, we have Alex Kopko, my 16-year-old son, and his weekly installment of the Sound Seeing Tour of Mount Moriah Cemetery. So here we go with Alex.
We just left the flagpole. We're walking down the little road here through the cemetery. You see just over here on the right, all these iron fences and everything. Again, real typical of Victorian era Deadwood. The iron fences not only mark off how big the plot was, but it also, I guess, is supposed to keep evil spirits and things like that out of the plots. These fences that you see here are original. They just have been sanded and resprayed, but they were the actual fences from early 1900s, late 1800s, that period. Yep. This is one of my favorite ones, too, because I like the handle on this gate here. Look at this handle. That's so cool. I like this because it just opens right up. And also these fences were made here in town by an ironworks company that was on Main Street. And also a lot of the original stones, like this one here, this original gray stone that you see here, and pretty much all of the stones that look like that were made here in Deadwood by the rock pulled out of the Homestake Mine.
Wow.
Just down here on the hillside now, we have the Chinese section of the cemetery. You can see the sign there, and I'm sure you can probably read, but considering none of these people are able to see this unless they look on the website at the pictures that we took from this tour, just tells that the Chinese were dug up 5 to 7 years after they were buried here in the cemetery and shipped back to their native villages in China for religious things like that. So there are not more than two bodies here in the section, and there is only one marked grave, and that isn't it. That one is actually just a homemade grave of someone who's buried there illegally, but Deadwood just decided not to dig them up. The real one is actually just over here on the right, and the stone is written in Chinese. So there is only one marked one left. Also with the Chinese, they were very ritualistic people, and you may have heard that there were tunnels dug underneath Deadwood from place to place where the Chinese used to go through and everything, and they did their weird things down there. But really, they dug these little caves, actually, is what they were. They weren't really tunnels. They didn't go, you know, building to building. They were just caves where the Chinese, where the white people made the Chinese go, because the Chinese like to smoke opium for different purposes. And I guess the white people decided that wasn't politically correct, so they sent them down there, and the Chinese were able to smoke their opium underneath the ground like that, rather than doing it in public. So that's really what the tunnels were used for.
Storage.
Yeah, they did turn them into storage eventually, but they were originally used, I guess, for the opium smoking. Also, the Chinese, before they were buried, went through a five-step process, kind of like a mummification, but not exactly. The first step was that the family of the deceased wave white banners out in front of their houses to show that they had lost someone, and on the white banners were written the names, or the name, I guess, of the person who had passed away. Second step was that the body was bathed in a special spirit water that the Chinese brought with them from China. The third step was that the body was set in a zinc-lined casket. Zinc was also the metal of that monument that we had earlier on the tour. And they estimate that the monument, in its state right now, will last in its exact state for approximately 5,000 years. So zinc, you know, was kind of built to last. So the Chinese were set in a zinc-lined casket and sealed with zinc nails. So they too were built to last. The fourth step was that the body was followed by a procession of flutes and pipas and dragons and firecrackers and things like that, celebration to their designated hole in the ground, where they were then set in and covered with cleansed dirt. Finally, the fifth step was that there were burners set up all across the United States, which basically was used in America, not in China, really. And in these burners, they would write out prayers on paper and put food and dolls and things like that in there and ignite it. And as the smoke flowed out of the chimney, the spirit was supposed to mingle with the smoke and, I guess, dissipate into the afterlife with the smoke.
And another great job by Alex. Okay, next we have, for all you HBO Deadwood fans, Mr. Dan Doherty, who's also known, by the way, as Earl Brown, and this is his band, Sacred Cowboys. And this is the song that he sent me, kind of a sneak preview for all his fans and fans of the show. And this is called Wrapped in Our Flag. And as I said, he said this was kind of a rough mix of one of the tunes that will be on their forthcoming album that they'll be shopping around to some of the major labels. And I think he said in his email to me that this might be the one that they'll try to push possibly as the single from the album. So here we go for all you fans, Wrapped in Our Flag with Sacred Cowboys.
My granddaddy stormed the sands of Normandy. My uncle lost a leg and his peace of mind to the VC. Four proud years I wore the uniform. My firstborn signed up after that fateful September morn. We were told of weapons that threatened our nation. To save our loved ones, measures needed taken. My son and others lined up to give their all. When the bugle sounded, our children answered the call. We fight for lives, for liberty. We fight for land, for our country. Duty and honor, we're taught not to brag, but we live our lives wrapped in our flag. Stars Stand up straight, put your hand over her heart. When old Betsy is raised, the anthem starts. Like we were taught, steadfast and true. When our kind bleed, we bleed red, white, and blue. Truth was the first casualty, there were no WMDs. Now we're told the mission is to spread democracy. Was it worth sending my son to Karbala to stand beside a bomb hidden in a car? We fight for lives, for liberties. We fight for land, for our country. Duty and honor we're taught not to brag, but we live our lives wrapped in our flag. Won't be able to stand with a broken heart. When old Betsy is folded, taps start. Lives of our children for a sand-blown coup. My son bled, he bled red, white, and blue. He fought for lives, for liberty. Gave all he had for our country. Duty and honor became pieces in a bag. My son come home wrapped in our flag. My boy came home wrapped in our flag.
And there we have an emotional tune from Earl Brown and the Sacred Cowboys. Up next is George Milos, the executive director of the Deadwood Chamber of Commerce and Visitors Bureau. And he'll be telling us here a little bit more about what goes on in the real Deadwood, South Dakota. And at some point when you are a tourist and you're here in the real Deadwood, you'll be able to take advantage of a lot of what George has been telling us about. So here we go with George.
Well, why don't you give us just a quick rundown, then a little preview of what's going to happen.
In February, of course, is the Mardi Gras celebration. And then in March, you know, March 17th is always our St. Patrick's Day celebration. Yep. And then into June, we get into Wild Bill Hickok Days, which is kind of cool. It was just named one of the top 100 events in North America. Then after Wild Bill Days, we get into July and the annual Days of 76 celebration, which will be in its 85th year.
That may be our biggest legacy event in terms of longevity, right?
Exactly. That's, you know, 85 years, that's a long time. It was kind of the Sturgis Rally of 75, 80 years ago. Mm-hmm. So it's really a cool event. And then after that, of course, it is the Sturgis Rally and Races.
Yep.
And then right after that, we're into late August, and that's where we do our annual Cool Deadwood Night celebration. And that one's also in about its 15th year, and that is a celebration of the 50s and 60s. We have a classic car show. This year we had just over 600 cars enter, and we do two nights of old-time rock and roll music.
Yeah, I've got a bunch of stills of the a lot of the hot rods and stuff that I'll put up on the website, and then I do have a little bit of just a snip or two of video that I'll put up there, too, so people can get an idea of parking the cars down Main Street, and people are kind of checking out under the hood having a great time on that.
Yeah, it's a real laid-back car show. You know, of course, you know, with 600 cars, if you win grand prize, it's very prestigious. But it's pretty laid-back. You know, it's not as high stress. You know, you're running around downtown Deadwood and listening to old rock and roll music, and it's just kind of a nice, calm car show.
Well, and speaking of the spillover, we get the spillover from the Corvette rally, is down the road in Spearfish, right?
Yeah,
and they have the Impala thing too.
Yeah, it seems like every car group or every old car has a group now. The joke we make around the office is we all drove Pintos, you know, working for nonprofits. We're going to have to get a Pinto group together.
I hear you. Well, what about the year that the Gulfstream, those silver trailer homes? You see one in a blue moon, and it was considered like an antique motorhome thing to see so many of them in one spot. It was amazing.
Yeah, they had the National Airstream Convention.
Airstream, yeah. What did I say? Gulfstream?
I'm
from the
Gulfstream.
I'm from the Gulf of Mexico. I'm from Florida, but anyway.
And I believe a Gulfstream's an airplane, so yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, that would be an awesome rally.
Yeah,
it'd have to go in formation like the Blue Angels.
Like the Blue Angels, exactly. But the Airstreams, yeah, it was very cool. It's strange because the history and the beauty of not only Deadwood, but the Black Hills with Mount Rushmore and Crazy Horse just down the road, Custer State Park, the Badlands, Devil's Tower. More and more people, I think, are discovering in this area, and they're not only making this their vacation choice, but they're also making it their choice to have conventions and meetings and family reunions and things like that, and we're happy to have them.
Well, now, as I mentioned, it's actually October right now. Who knows when anybody will be listening to this, but we are coming in. People think of Deadwood as a place to come in the summer, but we do have a lot going on in the winter in terms of our skiing, and talk a little bit about the packages. We have a central reservation situation going on, and we do have the whole winter outdoor thing going on too.
Yeah, we really do. We've got two ski areas, which are basically 5 miles out our back door: Deer Mountain Ski Area and Terry Peak Ski Area. And really, it is some of the best skiing this side of the Rocky Mountains, and this side east of Jackson Hole. Plus, we've got about 300 miles of groomed snowmobile trails, which is actually some of the best in the nation. It has been named some of the best in the nation by very prestigious snowmobile magazines. And that's right here. I mean, you can snowmobile from downtown Deadwood, basically.
Yep.
So the winter sports here are really fantastic. And we do have packages that you can call one number at Black Hills Central Reservations, or you can go online at blackhillsvacations.com, and you can book everything from a stay and sled package to a stay and ski package. You can make it as long as you want, as many days as you want, or if you just want to rent a sled, you can do that also.
Well, I think that we have covered quite a bit of ground here, and like I said, I want you guys and Joe sometimes too. Mm-hmm. To be our guests here and let us know what's going on, and not only talking about in advance of some of these events, but actually maybe wrapping them up right when they're over and talk about what happened and what our numbers were and that kind of thing. Keep us all posted.
We could go on for hours, and I know it would be a lot of fun to get us right after an event, because that's when we always remember the good stories. So
right. And you pretty much document them too in terms of pictures and possibly a little bit of video. So that would be, I try to get out with my camera as often as I can, but sometimes I just don't. So it'd be great if you could supply me with a little bit of that content. Would be fantastic.
Absolutely. Whatever you need.
Okay, George, thanks very much.
Thank you, Paul.
And there we have George. And of course, he's telling all of you why you should be here in the real Deadwood. And as I mentioned earlier, we have fans worldwide. We sure hope that someday you will plan a trip, plan your vacation, plan your excursion here to the real Deadwood in the Black Hills of South Dakota. You heard George talking a little bit about some of the attractions around here. We have Devil's Tower, which was seen years ago in the movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind. And, of course, we have the Badlands, which is unbelievable. That's actually my favorite thing to see out here. It's just breathtaking. If you Google it sometime, and I'm sure you'll find some websites with pictures, but nothing can match actually being there live. And, of course, the big granddaddy of them all, Mount Rushmore, is just a little bit south of Rapid City, which is 47 miles away from here. So, there's tons of things to do. And, of course, Crazy Horse is right there, not too far from Mount Rushmore, the Crazy Horse Memorial. So, the weather is always fantastic, whether it's summer or winter. So you've got to come and see the real Deadwood, South Dakota. Now, before we wrap things up this time, I'd like to give a shout out to one of our fans in the Netherlands, and his name is Ernie Van Kroening, and he emailed me at
realdeadwoodpodcast@gmail.com, which you can do. Also, of course, you can Skype us at Real Deadwood Podcast. But anyway, he said, "Hi, Paul. I just wanted to let you know that I really enjoy your podcast about Deadwood, parentheses, the real one and the HBO one. Great content and cool interviews. Parentheses, the Bobby V story about his stage debut after Buddy Holly's plane crash is a great one. And if you haven't heard that story, you'll need to tune into episode one and hear the first segment of the interview with Bobby V. Keep up the great work. Thanks for everything. Greetings from the Netherlands. Signed, Ernie." So then I emailed him back, and I said, "Thanks so much for the kind words, but do you get HBO Deadwood in the Netherlands? I didn't realize it was available there." And then he emailed me back, and he said, "Unfortunately, we don't get HBO Deadwood in the Netherlands. Some other shows, like Carnival, were bought by local Dutch stations, but not yet Deadwood. I've downloaded all episodes just after they aired and bought the DVD at Amazon when it came out." He says, "I am, like some of your guests on your show, an historian, and I am fascinated by the mixture of facts, drama, humor, and fiction of the Deadwood show. The great thing about your show," meaning, of course, the Real Deadwood Podcast, "is that you provide a ton of great other facts and information about Deadwood and its inhabitants, and that brings it all so much more to life. Cheers, EC." So again, a shout out to EC Van Kroening, Ernie Van Kroening of the Netherlands. Thank you so much for the very nice fan mail. And I urge you all to email me with your thoughts and your comments. And I will read the best ones here on the show. And of course, as I said earlier, if you want to Skype me, go ahead and download Skype and install it on your computer. It is absolutely free. Actually, this show is being recorded on January 5th, and today was the Consumer Electronics Show, where a number of companies are announcing telephones for Skype, so that you don't even need a computer. You can just go ahead and make a phone call over the internet without a computer with some of these Skype phones. And also, Skype is selling a starter kit at Radio Shack now, so you can go there and pick that up and go ahead and install Skype. Go ahead and search for Real Deadwood Podcast as our Skype ID. And if I'm home and if I'm online, I can go ahead and my computer basically will ring, and I can talk to you live, and you can tell me what you think. But if I'm not home, I have a Skype voicemail on my laptop, and it's always on. So you can call me anytime over Skype. And who knows, I might play your message here on the Real Deadwood Podcast to a worldwide audience. Well, that is it for this episode of the Real Deadwood Podcast. Thank you so much for being with me today. The music you're hearing right now is from my album called Black Hills Gold. It's an album of original instrumental music inspired by the legends and natural wonders of the Black Hills. It's available on iTunes, and each individual piece of music is downloadable for 99 cents. Or you can buy the entire album on a CD or a cassette tape at pauldennis.com, and there is a link for that on the Real Deadwood Podcast website. Thanks so much again for being with me this time. I will see you next time. From the Real Deadwood, this is Paul Dennis, wishing you all the best.